And now it's time for the Boat Wrench Radio Show with our certified, or maybe certifiable, master technician and host Rob Gina of Boat Wrench, along with Captain Patrick Pernito, your boat specialist from Regal Boats.
Holy shnikes.
And good morning, Central Florida. This is Dan Watson sitting in today for Rob Gina, along with Captain Patrick, with another edition of the Boat Wrench Radio Show. Got a great show lined up for you today. Lots of information. And as always, all you got to do to get involved in the show, make your comments, ask questions, is pick up that telephone and call us at 407-916-8255. That's 407-916-8255 or toll free 800-729-8255. Morning, Patrick.
How you doing over there, Dan?
Well, doing good. Hadn't been here in a little while. Great to be back.
Well, we've been holding off waiting for you to come in so we could do a show that's probably a little deeper in content than, you know, not that the information that Rob and I tend to talk about isn't good information. It is. It's all good. But it tends to be when you come on, you and I get into more of, political discourse.
That's true. Some people would call them esoterical, but we'll just say they're political informative discussions. So I understand you've got a very particular exciting guest for us to talk to this morning.
Well, yeah, we do. We have Matt Dunn is going to be joining us out of Washington, D.C. He's the legislative director for the NMMA, the National Marine Manufacturers Association. And what he's coming on to talk with us about, and hopefully for our listeners to pay heed to, is the ethanol issue. We've been talking about this, I don't know, a year and a half, two
Quite
years.
Quite a while, yeah.
And a waiver that's been put out there to go right to E15, a waiver that's been requested from the EPA, and the EPA, of course, already has testing procedures in place for ethanol, and certain politicians from certain states that maybe produce a certain agricultural product that is used for ethanol are kind of leading the charge on getting this waiver. And, you know, the E10, I hate it.
It is amazing the way things tend to work. And Matt, this is no reflection on you if you're listening, but out of Washington, which is E10 is a disaster. So let's go to E15.
Exactly. You know? And let's not test it.
Let's
get the EPA to give us a waiver so we can push E15 right in. And as you've pointed out on the show, when we have gotten into the ethanol discussion, it takes 110% energy to convert that product into a usable fuel that doesn't increase fuel mileage, doesn't lower emissions. It's less fuel efficient. You have to fuel up more. It hasn't dropped the price of fuel, and it's tearing up not only the marine engines, but we also have its effect on automotive and your other gasoline powered equipment, lawnmowers, edgers, things like that.
Patrick, if you and I can find the little chemist sitting in his basement having fun with his chemistry set that can come up with the additive that counters ethanol, we can make $1 billion a month. You cannot believe how many calls I get from people asking me if AMSOIL Corporation makes an additive to counter the effects of ethanol. And the answer is, there's no one that makes an additive to actually counter all the effects of ethanol. You may put in a different type of octane additive. You may do this, you may do that. But there is no silver bullet that actually removes the destruction of ethanol.
Unless you take it completely out and go back what we were putting in before we started.
Well, that's right. What we
ethanol need
is a waiver. You're talking about a waiver. We need a waiver that allows you not to use ethanol blended fuel.
Yeah, you know, I'll pay 50 cents more a gallon, you know, for regular fuel that I'm going to get better fuel mileage out of.
Well, and listen, we're doing that now, but it's indirect because there's a 50 cent a gallon supplement from Washington to ethanol producers. So we're actually paying 50 cents a gallon more for ethanol blended fuel, but we're doing it through the government. They take our money by force of action through taxes, and then they give it to make the ethanol blenders make fuel that we don't want.
Well, why don't we get right to Matt,
and
we'll get to the expert.
Matt, are you there?
Yes, good morning. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're delighted to have you. You can tell if you listen to us any at all that we're not very happy with the even the E10 ethanol blend, much less going to 15.
Sure. Well, that's understandable, and unfortunately, you know, I agree with you guys, but E10's here to stay, and I think the big fight for us and everyone who owns a boat or a car or a motorcycle these days is to prevent EPA from moving to a E15 blend.
Well, even with the E10, I saw an article that actually Christine had kind of forwarded to me about these police cars in Baltimore that it took E10 took out half their fleet.
Yeah, well, they think that's a mid-level blend higher than E10, but they're not sure. But they had 70 police cars fail one night because of some ethanol content in the gasoline supply they were using.
Well, you know, Matt, in particular in the marine arena, it has been a tough sell to convince anybody that running ethanol blended fuel mixtures is a worthwhile thing. In particular, if you go to marine engines where people pre-mix their two-stroke oil in the tank, the old pre-mix where they mix the gas and the oil together rather than having a fuel injection system that uses a injection tank to put the oil into the gas stream. And in those pre-mix conditions, all you have to do is let the fuel set for a long enough period of time, and the alcohol eventually comes out of solution and goes to the bottom of the tank, and the rest of your gas sits on top of it, basically. And all of the oil protective additives are up in the gas, and nothing's in the alcohol. And if you're not careful and you start your motor, most of your pickup tubes go to the bottom of the tank, and you start running your two-stroke engine on 100% ethanol. It'll start and run on it. It's just no protective oil or additives in that alcohol, and you just seize the motor up in 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds of trying to run it.
That's right. That's a phase separation process. It happens in two-stroke engines with E10 now. We expect these problems will be much worse with E15, but it's not just a two-stroke problem. Phase separation can happen in four-stroke motors as well. If you leave it sitting, put it up in storage, you've got fuel in the tank. Ethanol, gasoline only has a shelf life of about 90 days. So you're going to have that separation problem with any type of motor, which is one of the reasons this fuel is not really a good fuel or a compatible fuel.
Well, I can tell you just one particular example of what you're talking about. I in my regular business as an oil distributor, I do service for a number of lawn and garden shops. And one of the particular ones that I have is a real active shop. And they've had over 100 warranty claims on two-stroke engines such as chainsaws, weed whackers, and those types of pieces of equipment. And they've all seized and been taken out from this problem of typical homeowner sets their weed whacker, chainsaw, whatever it is, they set it on the shelf and it's there for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they take it to run it, and the little pickup tube that's in those tanks is square right down in the bottom of the tank. And just on the occasion that piece of equipment didn't get shaken naturally by moving it around enough to try to mix it back up, and they pull this pure ethanol into the engine, and it runs on it for a few seconds, but it has no lubrication, and it seizes up. And all of the manufacturers of those equipment, which is a variety, I won't get into their names, they all reject any warranty claim based on that situation because they say that the equipment is not designed to run on fuel without lubrication. And if you run it on fuel without lubrication, it sees it's your problem. So there have been over 100 warranty claims at one lawn and garden shop based on this issue.
Yeah, this is a major problem for engine manufacturers. It's a major problem for consumers. I think every manufacturer who makes a internal combustion engine at this stage advises their consumers that they'll warranty up to E10. For 30 years, E10 has been a legal ceiling for fuel, and now we see a very hasty, ill-advised movement to go to E15 by the folks who grow corn and make ethanol fuel. And one of the things they're not contemplating is widespread product problems, performance problems, and product liability issues down the road. And I can tell you, representing manufacturers of these products, that the last thing they want is their consumers to have their machines fail because an incompatible fuel has been introduced into the marketplace. So we have been suggesting very strongly to EPA that before they, if they proceed with this waiver, they should do the requisite testing as is required by the law. And currently there have been no official EPA or DOE testing on marine engines for E15, but we do hope that those are getting underway, and we think that this process should wait until the outcomes of those tests before EPA arrives at a decision point.
Yeah, and that's the part that puzzles me, is the EPA seems like they've got enough scientific testing procedures that are in place, but yet we have certain politicians that are pushing for this waiver to completely ignore what the EPA has set up as far as its testing and just go straight into this E15.
Right. It's a real problem for EPA, and I can tell you I don't envy them. On the one hand, they have an obligation under the law to protect the environment and air quality and water quality. On the other hand, they have a mandate passed in 2007 to put more renewable fuel into the gasoline supply in the United States. And one of the clearest ways to do that is to go to corn ethanol, but there are other ways. E15, we think, is a terrible option, but there are members of the Congress who representing their corn-based constituents who are, we believe, trying to move this process forward without the necessary scientific information to make a good decision. We think if this process plays out in the light of day through the normal regulatory channels, with the information at hand, it is inconceivable to me that EPA could grant this waiver with the science that they have, because all of it points to increased air emissions, product failure, et cetera. And at a minimum, we believe EPA should wait to finish the scientific investigation prior to granting the waiver, which would be due December 1, 2009.
Right. Well, I mean, we already know with the E10, we're not as efficient, so we're having to actually fuel up more. We're actually creating more emissions out of our vehicles. And my understanding is Senators Collins and Cardin have introduced the mid-level ethanol bill to protect consumers. Can you give us a little information on that?
Sure. Senator Collins from Maine and had heard quite a bit from her voting constituents up in the state, as well as some of her foresters, and was interested in looking into this issue a little more. And this is occurring in the context of the waiver decision that's currently happening. This bill would essentially slow down the process a little bit to get some more information on the potential impacts on consumers for E15, and it would validate the scientific procedures and the regulatory procedures that are currently in place and strengthen them in some ways to ensure that we go through the proper process before getting to an E15.
Now, where are we with this bill that was introduced?
It was introduced early last week, and the bill has been co-sponsored by Senator Whitehouse from Rhode Island, Senator Landrieu from Louisiana, and Senator Webb from Virginia. We're going to continue to work on getting additional co-sponsors in the Senate and try to move that bill forward on some kind of legislative vehicle before the end of the year. It's going to be a tough sell. We'll need your listeners to help in the process, but it's a way to proactively push back on some of these efforts being made by ethanol advocates who are trying to, we believe, circumvent these processes.
Well, Matt, I guess a practical question I have is if you go across the country, and a lot of states have mandated 10% ethanol mixtures, and you go with the total consumption of gasoline in the country, which I don't have a number on that, but let's just assume that it's, I don't know, at least 3, 4, 5 million barrels of gasoline a day being used in the United States. Now, if you take 10% of, just use the number 5 million barrels, that means you'd have to be producing 50,000 barrels of ethanol per day times 365 days. What I'm leading to here is the math is all wrong because I don't know the numbers. But here's the thing. We're going to say we're going to increase the ethanol production by 50% because 10%, if I go up 5%, I'm going up having to produce 50% more ethanol in the country to meet that mandate of an E85. So if we do that, if we go to 15% ethanol blend, am I going to go to Outback or one of the steakhouses and pay $30 now for a steak because there's no corn left for the beef industry, for the feeder lots to feed the cattle, the pork, chickens, the whole nine yards? And we've already seen all of those areas of our economy have a direct hit on the grain supply. Are we going to see massive increases in those prices to cover 50% more ethanol?
Well, there's no question but that increased corn production and the way in the ethanol manufacturing process has increased food prices in the United States and particularly abroad in lesser developed countries where, you know, people live on a dollar a day.
Right.
You know, we certainly think that food should be used for people and not for fuel in most cases. But the fact remains that the on the law and statute is a requirement that the country put 36 billion gallons of renewable fuel into the gasoline supply by 2022.
So that's a legislative process that can be reversed if you have the right people in place.
That is certainly true, and we would say that if it is the case that we're putting incompatible fuels into the market, or we're causing significant environmental harm, or harm to consumers, putting consumers at risk by moving to fuels which are not good, net good for either the environment or the consumer, then we should revisit the question of whether these mandates are attainable with our current technologies in the fuel space.
Right.
That is a difficult political position to be in, and very few members of Congress, I think, are willing to take that on. What they are willing to do is put a hard look on this, and, you know, there are a lot of advanced second and third generation biofuels out there that are basically have the molecular structure of a hydrocarbon and are compatible with existing engines and with the existing pipeline system and infrastructure in the U.S.
Well, yes, I understand what you're saying. One of the things that I think is unfortunate across the country, we're up against a break here. So let's do this, Matt. We're 10 seconds from a break. Got to take it, hard break. Just hang on. We come back. I got a couple things on that I'd really like to pick your brain about. So if you'll stay with us, we'll be back in just a few minutes after these commercials.
For what it's worth, I can barely smell you.
740 The Game. Play hard.
Ahoy! Glad to see you've dropped anchor at 740 The Game. You're listening to the Boat Wrench Radio Show, and lines are open now for your boating questions and comments at 407-916-TALK or toll-free 1-800-729-TALK. And now back to Rob Gina and Captain Patrick.
And welcome back to the Boat Wrench Radio Show. Had a super guest on today on by phone out of Washington, D.C. We're talking with Matt Dunn, who is the legislative director for the National Marine Manufacturers Association. And we're talking about the effort that is underway to bring in a 15% blend, of ethanol, E15, which would, many of us think, not be the best thing. So, Matt, you back on the line with me?
I'm here, yep. How you doing?
A couple things I wanted to ask you before we get back into the discussion, just as we make sure we hit this a couple times. Are there places where our listeners, our Central Florida boaters, who this affects as much as anybody, if not worse than anybody, is there some place they're able to get involved with their political organization or something to have some effect on this?
Well, we will soon be launching an advocacy effort on the Collins Cardin bill on NMMA.org, which your folks can visit our site and participate in that and keep apprised of some of the things we're doing there. Or if there are local trade groups your listeners are members of, I'd encourage them to go to the leadership of those groups and say, look, let's work on this issue and work together on it.
And then they would influence our local politicians, our senators, and especially our district congressmen that are in Central Florida.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, well, we just want to make sure folks realize that there's something they can do if they're interested in these types of issues, because the worst thing is you hear them, you think that, boy, something ought to be done about that, and then you go on about your business, boating or fishing, and you never do anything yourself personally. And if you don't do anything personally, then you get whatever the results are, and you can't complain.
Yeah, you're going to go to the gas station one day, it's going to be E15 or worse, and you're going to be wondering what happened.
Well, and boaters are pretty intense on this issue, I have to tell you. We when the comment period was open for the E15 waiver, we and Boat US worked together on mobilizing folks all throughout the United States, and about 35,000 individual people sent comments, boaters sent comments to EPA opposing the waiver.
Well, good. Good. That's outstanding. I had a question for you, Matt, since you are you walk the hall, so to speak, and you have your ear close to, you know, the political heartbeat that's going on. And I understand exactly what you were talking about before when you said that there's certain things that are in place and that people are not going to rock the boat on, such as E10 ethanol. I wonder if there's any opportunity in the politics of this thing for some type of caveat to be put in this bill that associated with ethanol that would have a trigger to limit further ethanol production when you hit a certain grain price that affects the food chain?
That's an interesting question. A little beyond my expertise, but politically speaking, I think that would be difficult to do, to revisit the renewable fuel standard law that was passed in 2007. And it's difficult to revisit because a lot of members of Congress and their staff don't want to go back and open it up, because it could either be fully stripped away or, on the other end, it could be made a lot worse than it currently is. I think it's the thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if when Congress wrote that with those fuel requirements, you know, cellulosic fuel was promising, advanced biofuels was promising, and the pathway for reaching them primarily was E85 to be used in flexible fuel cars, which are specifically manufactured to run on ethanol fuel. That's fine. You would never put E85 in your boat. There's a separate pump. It's clearly labeled, et cetera. But the problem now is that the ethanol manufacturers have moved away from E85 because they believe it's not economically viable. Consumers have not taken to it, and they are trying to force their product in the marketplace by blending it with regular gasoline at your automotive filling stations. And we think this is a totally bad approach, as we've been talking about this morning.
Right.
And we're resisting it. But, you know, that being said, we've got to make sure that we're proactive and we act defensively as they try to use various legislative tools at their disposal to circumvent the regulatory process.
Right. You know, Matt, you make a good example of something that I have. Let's say when I teach some different courses and classes, and I will tell people sometimes, is that you have to understand that in the nature of government politics is that you may have an issue, which is energy production, and you may think that the solutions are based around the technology of how to produce the best source of alternative energy, when in fact the solutions are actually based around the political compromises and the gains or losses between the politicians on how that affects the political landscape in their particular state or in their constituencies. And when you see the result of some of these major programs, such as ethanol or E15 or E85 or whichever one of these things you're talking about, if you go to the science side, the engineering technology side, you will have a complete different view of where this technology should go and what it should produce than what you end up with. Because the problem is the politicians that make the decisions on where you should go rarely are their decisions based upon the technology, science, or engineering. Their decisions are based upon the politics of the situation, And quite frankly, most are not qualified to actually make decisions on the technology, engineering, or science, because it would be like asking most of them to decide on which kind of brain surgery you're going to use today. They don't have any technical expertise in those areas, so they fall back on what they know best, which is politics and agreements with other politicians.
But Dan, that's where the EPA comes in, who has in place testing procedures, which, as you know, what you had just said kind of points out that the politicians want to completely jump over this proven testing and go based on emotion, getting on this bandwagon of, you know, environment, and
for example, if I took all the feedstock we use in ethanol and used it to make biodiesel, I'd have a real winner on my hands, because biodiesel has the same, almost exactly the same, in some cases a little higher energy content than the same amount of petroleum diesel. But alcohol does not have the same BTUs per pound mass, the same energy content as gasoline. So I can make as much of it as I want, but it just doesn't have the energy content. So if I used it to make biodiesel, biodiesel is very viable throughout the country in millions of diesel vehicles without any effort whatsoever. So if I move that direction to alternative fuels, take the pressure off of making diesel out of gasoline so that I spend my time with alternative fuels and biodiesel, I'd make some headway. But that would be understanding the technology and actually moving in a direction that the engineering and the science supports, rather than moving in a direction that politics supports. Matt, I'm sorry, I'm rambling on. So what's your comments?
No, I mean, I agree with you. These decisions made in Congress are often policy compromises. You know, I think Congress had good intentions when it wanted to move forward with increasing the amount of renewable fuels and gasoline. We certainly support reducing our dependence on foreign sources of oil. There are lots of promising technologies out there. The point you're making is exactly right. We should allow those promising technologies to proceed in a world where they can compete against alternatives like corn-based ethanol fuels. But as we currently have it, corn ethanol is highly subsidized. They have a very powerful lobbying group and a very strong coalition on Capitol Hill representing their interests. So we've, you know, all got to work together. At this point, you know, we're working with groups as diverse as environmental organizations, refiners, some biofuel manufacturer trade groups, and a bunch of engine manufacturers, hunger groups, and food groups, because the diversity of interests that are potentially negatively affected by corn ethanol is very significant. And so we're trying to leverage that coalition effort against a very well-funded, powerful lobbying group in Washington, D.C., in the corn and ethanol lobby.
Well, Matt, there you go with a dose of reality. Here we were, you know, wandering off into the esoterical values of the technologies, and you're well-suited to give us a dose of reality. It comes down to coalitions and the interest that people have and how they're affected by these things, and that's the political system. And obviously, you know, that's something that you're well-suited to, you know, give us the information on.
But, Dan, you know, one of the things you pointed out during the break when you and I were talking was that, okay, we're going to ethanol. As Matt points out, it's here to stay, you know, at least E10. So, you know, that's what we've got. But there are other agricultural products that can be converted more efficiently into ethanol.
Absolutely.
Other than corn, whether it be sugarcane, sugar beets, what have you.
Corn is a wonderful product grown in the Midwest, but it sits as the least efficient producer of ethanol of a list of about 10, of which sugarcane usually is sitting close to the top. So, okay, you want to make ethanol, let's go down to Louisiana and Florida and Mississippi and Hawaii, and let's plant another million acres of sugarcane, and the production of that might outproduce all the alcohol produced in Iowa, based on sugarcane being incredibly more efficient. That's what Brazil uses as sugarcane. So when we compare us to Brazil for ethanol, it's like comparing an Eskimo to a Sahara Desert Bedouin. There is no comparison. They don't do the same thing. Brazil produces it off of millions of acres of sugarcane, of which we don't do virtually any. Now, they are building down in the Florida Everglades at U.S. Sugar. There is now an ethanol plant under construction based on actually sugarcane waste from the mill that makes regular sugar. So that's terrific. There's another one being built here in Florida on orange juice matter waste. When they make the orange juice, they have all the pulp and all this leftover stuff. So that's wonderful. Make all the ethanol you can off of everything that we used to throw away. That's a terrific idea. I'm 100%. Let's do that. That's smart. But making ethanol out of corn, which is rated as the least efficient product for making alcohol on the market, it's like if you buy rum from Puerto Rico, they made it from sugar cane. And that's why you see so many times that awful stuff, that 151 rum that came out of the islands. That's because it was so hot and alcohol made from the sugar cane, they couldn't hardly get it less. So anyway, we're rambling on again, and we're headed
just you, Dan.
Yeah, just me. We're headed up against another break here, but Matt, hang with us for just a few minutes into the last segment, and we'll let you give us some more doses of political reality, because that's what this event really is right now, is it's marshaling the political forces in order to, in my view, prevent another follow-on mistake to the original mistake, which would be trying to go to a higher percentage of alcohol, which, quite honestly, I don't know how they'll produce it, because there's lots of people that don't believe that we can produce 36 billion gallons of alcohol, much less if you go up 50%, that's going to be 54 billion gallons of alcohol. That would be a challenge from the current corn production period. I don't think we can get there. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after this break with Matt Dunn, the legislative director for the National Marine Manufacturers Association, out of Washington, D.C. We'll be back in a moment.
Even the refs can't screw this up.
Are you drunk?
740 The Game.
Play hard.
You're listening to the Boat Wrench Radio Show. Got a boat problem or question? Ask the boat experts right now at 407-916-TALK or toll free 1-800-729-TALK. And now back to your hosts, Rob, Gina, and Captain Patrick.
So, Dan, what do you think that motor would have sounded like on E15?
A lot less hum, a lot more knocking. Anyway, well, folks, you're listening to the Boat Wrench Radio Show. We've had a terrific guest with us today, Matt Dunn, the legislative director for the National Marine. I get that, National
Marine Manufacturers. You're having a Rob Gina moment.
I was going to say the National Marine Mechanics Association. I said, wait a minute, that's not right. This is the manufacturers, a little bigger than the mechanics. Anyway. But a great organization across the United States that is primarily, for all the boaters out there that are not familiar with the NMMA, they do lots of things to try to standardize the things that you use on your boat. They actually have come up with codes for lubricants and oils that meet the NMMA certification requirements. They do this with safety equipment, all kinds of things. So they're a great organization to enhance the reliability of that boat that you use out there on a weekend basis, or the one you live on, whatever you're doing. So a great organization, and Matt spends his time in Washington, D.C., trying to make the issues for boaters well known to the legislative process in Washington, a job that I would say is sort of like herding cats, Matt.
It's a great job, and it's a great industry to represent. We have a lot of allies and friends in Congress, but it certainly keeps me busy. We've got a lot of issues every day, particularly in this economy. But we keep focused on important ones, and E15 is certainly an important issue for us.
Well, it is, and one of the things, as we said before to our listeners, we want to reemphasize it again, is they can go to NMMA.org and check out this issue on the website. We encourage all of our listeners to be active by contacting your local congressman and your senators for the state. Of course, we've got a new senator from Florida with Senator Lemieux just taking that position as which was unexpected by most of us here in Florida, kind of an unusual thing for a senator to resign in his term like this. So I'm I don't know. I'm just curious to see if there's some illness involved in this that we don't know anything about that'll come out later. But anyway, we have a new senator, and we have Senator Nelson here in Florida. But I might say that one of the big proponents of ethanol would be the other Senator Nelson, Ben Nelson, from the Midwest. And so our listeners just need to get familiar with who the players are and the people in Washington and make your comments known. I would advise you to keep civil your comments when you send them into your legislatures, because they're human beings, and if you send them some nasty email, they'll put it right in the proper file, which is it will be erased and never seen, because their staff is going to look at these things and they're not going to look at some derogatory remark. So send good, cogent comments that address the issues and what your concerns are. You send those, they make a difference to the legislators. Don't send a bunch of junk up. So, Matt, one last question from us. If somebody wants to send something that they have at least some comment on up to you, do you have a, would they go through the NMMA.org to send comments up to you, or would they have some other point of contact? Certainly not your personal email address, but some other point of contact.
Well, folks are free to call me. I get lots of calls every day from folks interested in the political process. I can't emphasize enough how important the grassroots effort is and will be as we continue on this effort. But NMMA.org does have a easy advocacy tool on its webpage where folks can very quickly send in a letter to their member of Congress and their senators. It's based on your zip code, so it goes to the right person. And we don't use any of that information for anything but the advocacy effort. And just shoot it right off. We're going to be putting up in the next couple of days an alert with some letter text that folks can send in on the Collins-Cardin bill, which is S-1666, asking their legislators to support it, co-sponsor it, and so forth. And we'll probably have additional legislative action requests over the next several months. And if people just want to learn more about what we're doing on ethanol, we have a whole page up on the website, on our federal website, of various information pieces, policy pieces, and some of the effort we've been putting in on this issue. So I encourage your listeners and appreciate you putting it out there for them to go to as a resource.
Well, Matt, we want to thank you for taking your time on a Saturday morning here to come in on the radio show and talk so that the folks, our listeners, can have a better understanding of what's going on with ethanol. We get the calls and the complaints about it, both to the radio show and to the boat businesses that we're associated with. So I want to thank you again, and maybe we'll have a chance to talk with you again in the future to see where this thing's going.
It was a pleasure. Anytime. I really appreciate it.
And be sure to thank Christine for me as well for, I guess, rounding you up and getting you on the air with us.
Will do. Will do.
All right. Well, thank you, Matt.
Thanks.
Folks, that was Matt Dunn, and we're glad to have him talking about ethanol this morning. We're running right down towards the end of the show, but I would encourage you to look at these issues. Don't just find out about this when you get out in your boat and you start having problems and you wonder, how in the world did this happen? It happens because too many times those of us that are affected by these different things are asleep at the wheel, and we're not actually paying attention. And you know what? The politicians have figured out they can sneak all kinds of things past us if we don't pay attention. We have to pay attention. We have to keep them aware of the fact that we're watching what they're doing, and if we're not happy with what they're doing, that they'll get to come home and join us on the boat instead of being up in Washington.
Now, very simply, E10 didn't deliver kind of what we were told it was going to do for us. E15 is, it will be even worse. And even though you can go to marinas now in Florida and you can get just straight gas like you did 3 or 4 years ago, you know, there's a premium paid for that. But you have to look beyond that, Dan, as you pointed out, you know, as we go down the chain of combustion engines, you know, other things that this E15 is going to affect, not to mention your vehicle that you drive, you know. And this is coming. If E10 had delivered kind of what we were led to believe it was going to be lower fuel prices, the same efficiency as, you know, regular gas, no increase in food prices. You know, if it had delivered that, I think it would have been a slam dunk, you know, and same thing with E15. If E15 had proven to be all of these things, the problem is they're not even testing E15 yet because the senators, being led by Senator Ben Nelson, is, again, requesting from the EPA a waiver to completely jump over everything that the EPA has already put in place for testing, scientific testing. Science!
Come on now. You don't want... Listen, there's a saying that goes like this, and it usually applies to most people in the legislative process of Washington. Don't confuse me with the facts. My mind is already made up. And here's the point on this, the last thing about this, is that, yes, there are alternative sources of energy. Yes, there are all these things that should be explored, and they are important. And the one thing that maybe we should consider as a nation and our legislative bodies is that it is time to stop with the vested interest of whether it's good to grow corn in the Midwest, and that's good for your constituents, and start to look at what might be good for this country overall, because we have a limited amount of time to come up with solutions for very real and difficult problems. And we have to decide that we cannot spend our time trying to take care of our vested interest. Remember, folks, quickly, when the Roman Empire was said to have fallen, it was destroyed by vested interest, individuals putting their interest above that of the country. That's what we're doing in these cases. We're out of time. My soapbox is falling out from under me, but hopefully
it's made out of ethanol.
Yeah, it's an ethanol soapbox. We'll try to get back here next week. So until then, boat often, boat safely, and for heaven's sakes, get out and have some fun. See you next week.